All right, we're going to go ahead and get started because we just got a little behind schedule. It does not look like our whole panel's here yet, but I think we're going to get started anyway because they're late. And I got a request that it's difficult to hear in the back, so for the panel members and people that come up later today, if you can make sure to speak closely to the microphone so that everyone can hear you. I'll wait till these three sit down, and then we can go down and introduce ourselves. Okay, Linda, can you start? Just say your name and your sector affiliation, and we'll go down.
Linda McCann, Sector 7 and 8 manager.
Libby Etrie, I'm sitting in for Nick Brinclioni, Northeast Fishery Sector 3.
Bill Chapralis, commercial fisherman with the Northeast Coastal Community Sector.
Mike Welsh, commercial fisherman, Northeast Fishery Sector 6.
David Levier, Northeast Fishery Sector 2 manager.
Al Catoni, commercial fisherman, Northeast Fishery Sector 2.
Vincent Balzano, commercial fisherman, Port Clyde sector.
Mike Russo, commercial fisherman, fixed gear sector.
Thanks. And I just want to let everyone on the panel know that the panel is larger than we originally thought, which is fantastic, but if we can keep comments as concise as possible, because this is a shorter time than the other panels. And with that said, if we could start with some of the people on the panel, maybe some of the fishermen on the panel, talking about the effort controls that are in place and how that affected you during the past year. And then if people build, you don't have to reiterate everything, but if someone wants to get started, that would be great.
Yes, like I said yesterday, I mean, the effort controls, I think, days at sea. We're not under days at sea no more. We're under sector management. We got a hard tack. I think take the handcuffs off. I think we should be allowed to catch fish. I never was a person that believed that you should be going up and down the same place and designate an area. I think you got to spread the fleet out. And by opening it up, I'm not saying that we should be ruining habitat. I think we should be looking at the habitat spots too. But I think you got to take the, restraints off us. I mean, we're under hard tacks, accountability. Discards get counted against us. You know, there's no reason for this. This is under an old game, and I didn't want to join the new game. In the first place, I did change my mind. I adjusted my business around. I just want to play the game where it's fair, and it should open up these areas to all of us.
Anyone else? All right, go ahead.
The rolling closures had a lot to do with the allocation that people received in the sectors. So having the roller closures, I don't know how long they've been in effect, but the boats that are tied to the shore were greatly affected by not being able to access the areas during the months when certain species came close to shore. So we got really low allocations on those species. So that affected the rolling closures in the past, actually affected how we fished in sectors. So to make things right in sectors, we should just eliminate them completely, because it'll go a long way to keep fleet diversity. Also, it'll help, I think, in leasing quota, because if you have the flexibility to fish anytime you want to fish, you'd be a little bit more aggressive as a small boat in leasing quota, especially dabs, where you can get them at a cheaper price, and they're only available during the times when the rolling closures are in place. So there's no sense of leasing them if you can't access them. So the rolling closure elimination will go a long way towards keeping fleet diversity.
Well, for me, fishing out of the southwest coast of Maine here, when we went from days at sea to sector management, I got two reliefs. Just days at sea requirements and trip limits. Other than that, everything stayed the same. The problem with that, and then I asked myself, is what type of system are we working under? and import controls or output controls. All right, they're two totally different management systems. One is basically based on inefficiencies. We put inefficiency on top of inefficiency off on top of inefficiency for 15 years to control fishing mortality. With an output control system, you have one control. That is your ace. All right, and you are allowed to make a business plan in order to how to effectively harvest your ace. The problem is that we have a hybrid between the two systems, and it's making it impossible for some people to manage it. So basically, the council or the fishery service is micromanaging each and every business by the input controls that we continue to lay over in this new system. So I think we need to look at each and every input system we put in since 1994 and ask, why did we do it? What's its effectiveness? Has it any usefulness to us anymore? And then move on. And I go from closed areas to bycatch percentages on exempted fisheries, because we have a lot of exempted fisheries that are managed or in place based on the 5% bycatch that you can prove. And there's more room for expansion. We have a professional fishing fleet. We should be treated as a professional fishing fleet and allow us to manage our own businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. A lot of stuff's already been, points have been touched on. I bought into this concept years ago with the development of the hook sector, with the caveat that someday we would not have so many input controls and constraints on the fleet to minimize your effectiveness. I think I would like to see the mortality closures looked at and eliminated, if possible, all along with identifying critical habitat that needs to be protected. I don't think there's anybody denying that there's areas that we need to identify in that department. But I believe the mortality closures should be dropped and we're allowed to fish more efficiently. With the potential, with the rumblings I hear of a Gulf of Maine cod cut, can't keep the fleet all driven up in the shoal water. Access to the Western Gulf of Maine closure for pollock and hake and for the otter trawl fleet, there's a lot more options for dabs and monks and stuff like that. Whatever the ACL is for Gulf of Maine cod, it's going to be what it is, but there's other stocks that we can move on to, and we need access to those areas. And I honestly feel by having the closed areas, you get skewed data in the stock assessments because places haven't been hit in a long time, and I think that happened in Area 1 with haddock. Fish were resident fish in there, and the tows by the albatross were substantial, which led to, I believe, an overinflated haddock attack. So I think the closed areas have run their course, and a different way to approach managing the fishery needs to be done. And I simply believe that the input control is the ACL that's issued, so it puts more dependence on the science that comes out. And that's what I bought into. So I would like to see these things happen. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Bill, did you have something to add?
Yes, I'd like to see, as far as the gear type in the fishery, that there's certain areas where gear types can fish. That way there, I think the science can get a better handle on the effectiveness of different gear types. And again, as I'll reiterate what I said before, I think you should keep those closed areas closed. And for the reason being that I think they never were closed in the first place, because it was gear type that was allowed to be taking the forage fish, the bait fish, out of there that these fish that are living in those closed areas depend upon. The other thing is, listening to Ellen Gaethel, let me get off of this a little bit, but, the socioeconomic impact on our small boat fishery is devastating. I fish out of Sandwich, and from Sandwich to Marshfield, there's four of us left, small boats, that are going out on Stellwagen Bank fishing for groundfish. Everybody else is just about giving up. I know there's a lot of other boats that have a lot of quota, that had a lot of quota, and they've sold their quota. They've had up to 150, 200,000 pounds, and they just can't take anymore. They don't even like the way everything's being managed in the sectors. As far as discard rates are concerned, a 10% discard rate in my gear type, you know, we've tagged a lot of codfish and released, and we're in a live fishery that we catch live fish and sell them, and the mortality rate of 10% is really kind of absurd, seeing that we also did studies back the Cape Cod hook for years with cage studies on live fish using jigging and hooking longline methods, and that study led us into doing other studies to get us into the haddock sap, but that study proved that the survivability rate was like 80 to 90%. And now, you know, I throw back a 21-inch fish that's live, and they tell me it's dead when I've got 500 or 600 pounds of liveies in my tank, and I'm bringing them back to the dock, going to put them in a live car, and the guy's going to come down a week later and pick them up and bring them to his tank, and then he's going to be bringing them to the restaurant where somebody's going to be seeing them swimming alive in a tank at the restaurant and buy them. Doesn't make, you know, so that's got to be looked at because it's not a dead fish. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the sector managers, maybe? Anything to add?
I do want to talk about the minimum size fish. If we can, if the council would look at this and see if we can't do something about these yellowtails and maybe increasing the minimum size. Not a big difference, I'm sorry.
Decreasing,
the minimum size because of the discards. That might help a little bit. I mean, I do believe in opening the closed areas and some of the rolling closures, but also with the mindset of we have to work with the habitat. And, you know, I think that if you had a panel or the fishermen and the council and maybe the agency and all three getting together and trying to work something out. But I do think that, you know, the council needs to put that on their to-do list to rethink this, revisit it. That's it for me right now.
Anyone else? David? Go ahead.
Well, removing some of the effort controls, I think, would help our sector. And what I heard from the fishermen last year is, you know, they left a lot of ace on the table in regards to the dabs because of the rolling closures. And because of the Western Gulf of Maine closure, they're not able to access the pollock ace. It would help them greatly to have those places open. Also, the minimum fish size, one of the problems we had with yellowtails, in reducing the size, the minimum fish size in the yellowtails, I think would help greatly too. It would reduce the discard and send those fish to market instead of having deducted from their ace.
Thanks. Libby, do you have anything to add?
Just going to stick with this. I just think it might be important to highlight that if you look back for the last 3 years, you can't see the most recent for next fishing year. Sectors have been requesting exemptions for things like the existing rolling closures that weren't universally exempt. And every single time they do, it's denied. So these exemption requests are viewed as a way to build in flexibility within the sector system. But, you know, what everyone is addressing here are things that we've tried to go through the exemption process and we continue to get denied. And this will really enable the sectors if there's the universal exemption and we're, you know, specific, let's look at the remaining rolling closures, will help create the flexibility that they need. And I think that credit has to be given to them because they've tried 3 years in a row to go through the exemption request in their sector operations plans. But it's continually being denied, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for the council to start looking at what is remaining with the rolling closures and the remaining effort controls to see how you can build in universal flexibility for the fishing industry in those under sectors.
Great, thanks. I think that was everyone on the panel. Are there any audience questions for the panel? Yep, Aaron.
So I've got partly a comment, partly a question. I hear different perspectives the one perspective, if I can sum it up accurately, and let me know if I'm not, but some people are saying open up the closed areas, and that's going to help allow the fleet to disperse a little bit more. Right now, everyone's fishing on top of each other, and I think a lot of people would agree that it doesn't make sense, as Billy pointed out, to have hook fishermen, gillnet fishermen, trawlers, a lot of different boats, regardless of gear type, whatever, everybody focusing in on one area. So the comment that, you know, opening up closed areas helps to disperse the fleet. On the other hand, I also hear the comment that, you know, we need closed areas, obviously, for habitat protection. We need closed areas to provide, you know, protection for the fish so that we have this sort of spillover effect and we have more fish for everybody to catch. So I just wanted to see if, you know, if both of those, you know, those ideas don't sound mutually exclusive to me. And so I want to just see if there's any comments to that. Also, I just wanted to make the point that, you know, we've all talked over the last couple days about the cod stock assessment, the review that happened, I think it was last week, and the potential reduction of Gulf of Maine cod for next year. We're talking about getting rid of the inefficiencies in the input control system, and we're relying on a quota-managed system, but that requires that the numbers that go into this quota managed system be as accurate as possible. And we pointed out over the past 2 days also that fluctuations in numbers, whether it's the pollock going from terribly low to now a six-fold increase, it just has dramatic changes economically and for the way that we fish. Well, same with having Gulf of Maine cod be a healthy stock. It's rebuilding. We're doing great. We're catching a lot of Gulf of Maine cod. And we saw the numbers yesterday where we're catching, I don't know what it was, 85-90% or whatever, Gulf of Maine cod. And now suddenly we're looking back at it and thinking, oh, well, maybe we overfished during those years, and we're looking at a reduction. Is there a role for closed areas or some of these other residual input controls in, you know, that we have now that we're saying are carryover? Is there a role for those in protecting the stocks as a buffer so we don't have wild fluctuations, that we don't go from, you know, saying Gulf of Maine cod is fine to, oh no, we're actually overfishing and we're, you know, and now we've got to cut it 40%. Because I think doing that is detrimental to the fishery economically, and in terms of making business plans, you can't make a business plan from 1 year to the next if your stocks are going to fluctuate wildly. So, thanks.
I think one of those questions should be back at the Science Center and ask them how the stock assessment was inside the closed area. Are all the cod in there? If they're not, maybe the cod just moved. They got fins. They can swim. They got tails. It's not an anomaly for them to leave. It's not. And it doesn't mean they're gone. It doesn't mean it's overfished. It just means the stock moved. A fish is nothing more than a bird. Bird migrates north. Bird migrates south. Period. I don't care if it's cod, pollock, redfish, whatever. There's a migration pattern. And they might have migrated further south, and that's why you're not seeing them up to the northern right now. And as far as closed areas with habitat, I think we should take a look at the whaleback. I think that's a very precise habitat area. It's closed. It's doing the protection. It's doing what it's designed for. And I think we can implement small areas like the whaleback instead of just closing down square miles of areas and, you know, saying like the pollock's five folds over. You're not going to catch a quarter on pollock because we're not allowing you in that area. That was Gulf of Maine West Enclosure was a prime area for pollock, redfish, monkfish, a lot of fish. I mean, there's no reason we shouldn't be harvesting. And we're not going to go over, and we're not going to go and take all the fish out of the area because we're all in hard tack. You don't have it, you ain't going. That's all it's to it. If you don't have the quota, you're not going in those areas. You're not going to over-harvest it. You know, we got to start streamlining some of this stuff. You got to make it right. There's guys that have been in the business a long time, may, you know, take the hits. It's time to reward them. That's what I heard in Amendment 5. Hey, 5 years, buddy. You hang on for 5 years, you're going to be all set. Well, you know what? I'm still here, and I'm not all set. I'm waiting for that all set part. You know, I'm waiting for the rewards of doing the right thing all the time. I'm waiting for it. I haven't seen it.
Thanks. Mike Russo, did you have something?
What you're speaking of, well, the closed area is already in effect, and yet we have this potential decrease in Gulf of Maine cod coming up. So where was the effectiveness of it?
All right, any more questions from the audience? Here, Terry.
Yeah, thank you all for presenting to us. As you likely know, the council will be making its priorities at the November meeting. One of the items on next week's groundfish committee agenda is making recommendations on groundfish priorities. And I've heard and read a large number of comments, and I'm wondering if you could provide us with your prioritized priorities to help guide us through next week's conversation into November.
You know, maybe we can go down the line if everyone could just say three or something. Or
speak as the nascent leader.
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm going to refer back to a lot of the points that were highlighted in the letters sent by the Northeast Fishery Sectors and the Northeast Seafood Coalition about priorities. I think, as this panel has highlighted, looking at the remaining effort controls, looking at closed areas, looking at rolling closures, trying to figure out ways to help this fishery achieve OI and actually become profitable utilizing the stocks that are available to them are a priority. I think, and I will somewhat defer if other people have opinions, I think looking at the 10% carryover component and looking at their ability to carry forward more than 10% if the stock biology allows is an important thing. And I also think a priority is at-sea monitoring and dockside monitoring. That's going to be a costly endeavor, and we have another year as a gap. But if we don't start thinking and talking about it now, we're going to be faced with the same impending cost in 2013.
Is there anyone that would disagree with those priorities?
I don't disagree. I just want to tell you how the letter comes about. There's 12 sectors sit down at the table. Two sector leaders from each sector, managers sit down, and we discuss this out. It's a broad range of people up and down the coast that's discussing this. Everybody hashes it on the table before we put it in the letter. I just want to get that out to everybody if they don't understand how we do things in the Northeast Seafood Coalition and the sector level on it. There's actually fishermen that are in charge of what they want in the fisheries, and they sit down at the table. Them and their managers sit down at the table and say, you know, what they think we should be doing, just to give everybody an idea of how it works.
Thanks. And I'll also point out that the breakout discussions that we're going to have this afternoon, are the facilitators are going to work with the groups to try to prioritize the issues that they talk about to provide some recommendations to the council, too. Any more questions for the panel from the audience? Oh, yeah, Vincent.
Terry, to answer your question, not only through all these comments that we've been talking the last couple of years with sector management, the things that I heard repeatedly yesterday and in other times were looking at the closed areas was the first thing that people talked about. The second big thing that I keep on hearing people talk about is the baseline restrictions on vessels. Another thing that you hear a lot of people talk about is just trying to access some of these redfish. How are we going to come up with a mechanism to access some of these redfish? It's a big stock that nobody's touching. Okay, those are just the three. Personally, for myself, fishing here, a fishery that I've pretty much been out of for 10 years but was always a huge income thing for me, and I know it could be a good fishery, is our whiting, our smallmouth whiting fishery, which has been handcuffed by the 5% bycatch issue for 15 years that I can think of now. So if we can just look at those kind of things, or how we can better use our ace, I think that's where I would prioritize it. Thank you.
Just to add one thing, because it was an oversight on my part, also looking at the minimum fish sizes as it relates to the current gear sizes, because, I mean, speaking with a lot of the guys that were encountering just under the legal size of yellowtail, it's a missed opportunity for them to land a truly marketable fish. Instead, we just reduce it, take it off their ace, and it's a missed opportunity. So I think that that would be another priority I would add to our list.
Thanks. Anyone else from the audience? Jim? Oh, sorry. Okay. Maggie's deferring to you. So in the front, Talia, Jim Adlin. Behind the pole.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, one of the gentlemen mentioned the 13-inch yellowtails, and I wanted to know what size mesh, what kind of mesh and size you're currently using to prosecute that fisherman.
Six and a half.
Six and a half, square or diamond?
Square, mostly.
Thanks.
Okay, Maggie.
Thank you. I wanted to just follow up on Vincent's comment about the redfish resource and point out that that is currently it's the fourth highest tag that's allocated to the fishery, and we catch probably even less of that than we do with the haddock tag. Associated Fisheries of Maine, in conjunction with Mass DMF and Maine DMR, are currently working on an experimental fishery using 4.5-inch cod heads, which has been very promising in terms of a good clean catch of redfish. And so we have that. We have some really good preliminary information, which we are hoping will be used to support an exemption request for the upcoming year. So that would be another issue that we would hope the council would address when they're discussing how do we make sectors work better. All of the sectors submitted requests for the upcoming year to NIMS on exemption requests, and I think our preliminary response from them was 201, every one of them were going to be rejected for one reason or another, and so we really need the council to take a look at that list of exemption requests that were submitted and make a determination of which ones they think they can support.
Thank you. Thanks. I've got Paul Howard.
I'm interested in some response about some management schemes have protocols, for instance, spawning protocols, that areas aren't closed up front. They're closed when a certain threshold is met. Like the observer would say that, there's 10% of the catch was at spawn or something like that, and then the area closes. I think they do that in Canada. So that's kind of a compromise between having areas closed and having the threshold. How would you feel about that as opposed to, having areas closed up front? Because, most literature says that combinations in an ecosystem management, combinations of input and output controls are the best form of management.
I'd like to get that. A lot of times, if you notice, fish will spawn, and they'll spawn in a certain area, a certain bottom, and that's it. I mean, that's why you need the precise spots. I mean, we got the, and Mass DMF's got some history on this. You got the conservation zone outside Boston. They were able to shrink that up because what they do is they cut down a big square miles and found out, guess what? The cod all don't go into that big area. They're very precise in where they go. And if you can, as far as the fishermen, if we can get these precise areas in, you can call it habitat spawning area. I mean, that's, I'm all for that. I've never believed in taking spawning fish out of the ocean. I never have. I mean, some of the parts I had with going to the large mesh was we're targeting the larger fish, the smarter fish that learned how to survive. I think there's a lot of things we got to look at. And I think through the sector management, you can look at a lot of stuff. Ego base, I think we can precisely close down little areas. The perfect example is outside Boston, the conservation zone. We'll back up off Isle of Shoals. I think we got to look at that type of closures, not just let's close half the ocean down because we know they spawn in this little spot over here. And I think fishermen are more willing to work nowadays because I could tell you right now, I know what DMF knew. I knew 20 years ago what was going on there. I mean, that's how you caught fish 20 years ago. You went and looked for them. I mean, I knew they were there. DMF just figured that out over the last few years. I mean, if they wanted to sit down with a fisherman and talk about it, they would have figured it out a lot quicker. They never wanted. I always made it. You got to get on the back of the boat to learn. And a lot of times you couldn't get that kind of working group together. I think nowadays you can. I think now you got a lot of people working together. You know, I mean, I think you could actually take care of that now. You couldn't do it 20 years ago, but you can now.
Thanks. Mike Russo, I saw your hand, too.
The areas that Mike mentioned seem to be pretty static as far as where the codfish go in the Gulf of Maine. But I fished the codfish grounds for years south of the BB buoy, and it might as well be called the dogfish grounds now. Fish spawned there. That was a big spawning area for Western Georgia's cod. So I'm more in favor of what Paul's bringing up. When you close an area, it's easy to close it. It takes a ungodly amount of energy through management to unwind it. And I'm not in favor of boxing things off, assuming that if you put up signs there, the fish are going to filter back in, because the ecosystem and channel has been overrun by skates and dogfish, and I no longer fish down there. And it's pretty sad to me. So just by making a box in an area that's traditionally been conducive for spawning doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the result you're looking for. And so I would agree with some type of system that Paul's talking about, regardless of the percentages. But, you know, some real – maybe it's adequate for the areas on Whaleback and in Boston Harbor. But in my short time I've been fishing, I've witnessed it in the channel, and it's pretty sad to see it happen. So, thank you.
Is there anyone on the panel that feels differently? Okay.
I've also fished down codfish grounds, figs, lemons, backside of the Cape, Asia Rip, what Mike's talking about. And I fished from the early 80s right up until 02, 03. And there was 40 or 45 other small boat hook fishermen that fished, made a good living from end of November, beginning of December, right through May, when there were no dogfish around. We had a great fishery. I'd like to know where those fish went, because they're no longer there, and they haven't been there for all these years. All those guys, those small boat fleet guys, are doing something else right now. They're lobstering, conking, charter boats, tuna fishing, whatever. That's a whole body of fish that's been gone. The gillnet fleet out of Chatham, which Mike is a gillnetter, he fishes out of Chatham, he can tell you those guys can't catch codfish anymore. They're leasing all their quota out to draggers, and they're skate fishing right outside and dog fishing off the harbor. And a lot of the guys that want to go cod fishing have to go up off of Stellwagen Bank to the Gulf of Maine, because that's the last place inshore where anybody's going to catch any codfish. I can tell you that. So I don't know where these fish went. Yeah, maybe they like birds and everything else, but they ain't coming back, and they haven't come back. And nobody can tell me, and I can give you names and numbers of 35 other fishermen that used to make a great living catching those fish in the wintertime, and they're out of business. So I don't know. I don't have all the answers, but I know one thing. Those fish are gone.
I know I took a big part of my quota out of there this September on the backside of the Cape with my codfish. A huge part of it, actually, the Gulf of Georgia's Bank cod. I don't know. They disappeared. I think there's an avoidance here. I actually see a lot more small ones than I've ever seen in years.
Mike Russo?
The point I'm bringing up is the hard bar has been taken over by skates and dogfish. What Mike's talking about is valid, and I do agree the fish have been on the softer bottom where we don't access them with fixed gear. I'm not disagreeing with any of those comments, but it's we fish hard bottom down there, and it's the fish habits have changed, but in the wintertime, the fish would come in to spawn in those hard spots, and they're not doing it. There's something going on. So the whole point of that is we all got different opinions of what we see, but the whole point I was making is when you make boxes in the ocean, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to achieve the result you're looking for, and it's awfully hard to change them. And then you end up with so many boxes. A lot of the ocean's tied up. That's the point I'm trying to drive at. It's not we all fish a little differently. We see things differently. But I'm more of in favor of an eco-based temporary approach towards spawning if that's necessary. Thank you.
Thanks, Vincent. Go ahead.
I'm going to refer back to my opening comments. And when you look at a lot of the closed areas, I don't think anybody's doesn't want to look at the narrowing the size and the time. Look at when we put them in. They've been in there since the 90s. Okay, it's going to be fishing you 2012. When we designed these, we made huge blocks for enforcement reasons. VMS was not a useful tool or a used tool at the time. Now every boat has a VMS. There's no reason, as they've said before, to block off just a huge part of the oceans for what benefit? If there's a benefit and it needs to be done, nobody's opposed to it, but we haven't even looked at it.
Okay, thanks. So it's 11:16, so unless someone in the audience has something that they can't live without saying, we'll thank these panel members and move on to our final panel, which is on sector manager responsibility and improving communications with managers.